Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I'll be reading the pantograph dated Tuesday, September 17th, 2019. Let's begin on the front page. Vape shop, e-cigarette flavors ban outrageous. Managers blame illegal THC, doctors urge vapers to quit. Saying illegal THC cartridges, not electronic cigarette flavors, are to blame for the recent life-threatening lung illnesses, the co-manager of a Bloomington vape shop called a proposed ban on e-cigarette flavors outrageous. The illnesses have been caused by tainted THC products, not vaping products sold legally in shops, said Scott Walk of the Choice Vape Shop in Smoker's Choice, 1212 Towanda Avenue. THC cartridges are an illegal product, he said. We can't sell them, said Walk's co-manager, Zach Magan. But Central Illinois medical professionals said investigations continue to determine the causative agent of the illnesses and deaths. Meanwhile, they recommend that Central Illinoisans quit vaping or don't start. There's no benefit to it, said Dr. Paul Peterson, president of the Illinois State Medical Society, vice president and chief medical officer of OSF Healthcare, St. Joseph Medical Center, and an internal medicine physician in Bloomington. So why do it? The U.S. Food and Drug Administration said last week that it will ban non-tobacco-flavored e-cigarettes following a rash of lung illnesses. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has reported more than 450 cases of severe respiratory illness and 6 deaths in 33 states. In Illinois, there have been 52 cases and 1 death, said Melanie Arnold of the Illinois Department of Public Health. The 18 counties where cases have been reported include Tazewell, Peoria, Champaign, and Vermilion. Walk and Megan said illicit market THC cartridges are the cause. THC is the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. Vitamin E acetate has recently been used as a thickening agent in black market vape cartridges, Walk said. When heated to vaporization levels, vitamin E acetate becomes highly toxic, he said. Vaping has been around for over 15 years and there was no single respiratory illness, Walk said. Now, because of the insane popularity of illegal, illicit black market THC products, this is happening now. Walk and Megan said vaping helped them to quit cigarette smoking after other approaches failed. They said e-cigarette dessert flavors helped to make cigarette smoking less satisfying. I feel infinitely better, Walk said. 95% of our vaping customers want the flavors. Banning flavors will push 13 million e-cigarette users back into combustible tobacco, which kills 1,300 people in the United States each day, or to the black market, Walk said, citing CDC statistics. It's going to put every single vape shop out of business, Walk said. If you want to reduce youth vaping use, only sell it in age-related locations, such as vape shops, and ban online sales. Illinois law prohibits sale of tobacco products, including e-cigarettes, to people under 21, said Crystal Temple, Macon County Health Department health educator. Dr. Rizwan Malik, a pulmonologist with Advocate Medical Group in Normal, said a recent New England Journal of Medicine study found that 80% of patients in the study with respiratory failure admitted to using a THC product in their e-cigarette. But there have been no conclusions as to which substance is responsible for the respiratory failure, he said. While Malik had no opinion on the proposed flavors ban, he said vaping should not be considered as a way to quit cigarettes. It is not without its harm. There is evidence of lung disease, and it could lead to a worsening of asthma symptoms. If people want to vape, they should not modify the product on their own, Malik said. Help is available. The Illinois Quit Line is a resource for people trying to quit smoking. People may call 866-QUITYES or visit quityes.org. McLean County Health Department's health promotion team is available as a resource for vaping intervention. Schools are invited to contact the program manager at 309-888-5446 to discuss a possible focus group for students who report vaping. Peterson called the proposed flavors ban reasonable. Vaping is not safe to do, Peterson said. There are chemicals that are not necessarily safe, including nicotine, which can lead to increased heart rate, blood vessel constriction, and reduced blood flow, he said. E-cigarettes, including Juuls, use liquids that contain nicotine, which is the same addictive drug found in cigarettes and other tobacco products, Temple said. People say it's safer than smoking cigarettes, Peterson said. Yes, because smoking is the number one cause of preventable death in the United States. If you're addicted to smoking cigarettes and want to use vaping to stop, then stop vaping after a period of time, he said. Peterson and Malik recommended that smokers talk with their doctor to determine smoking cessation tools, which may include nicotine replacement products such as a patch, gum, and lozenges, and smoking cessation medicine. These are treatments that have been shown in studies to work, Malik said. Normal looks to pension funding. State consolidation may lessen shortfall. Normal officials hope state action can help solve a long-standing local budget problem and won't cause any more. The town's police and fire pension funds continue to be funded well below expectations, despite long-term property tax increases, and leaders are looking to legislative consolidation of pension funds to address the situation. Normal Mayor Chris Coos compared the performance of funds like Normal's to the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, which the town also pays into and which supports its non-union employee retirements. There are hundreds of funds out there, and we only have one IMRF fund, and we see the result, said Coos during Monday's meeting of Normal City Council. The Illinois Municipal League is working hard to get bills through the legislature that would consolidate those funds. Normal's police pension fund stands at 55.88% funded for 2019, a decrease from 56.25% in 2018, versus 61.84% for its fire pension fund in 2019, and 60.64% for the fire fund in 2018. Officials hoped both funds would be 100% funded by 2040, and they're expected to be 90% funded then under state mandate. The town's IMRF funding level was 91.7% in 2017, which was reduced to 79.7% in 2018 due to a change in the expected investment returns on that fund, said Normal Finance Director Andrew Hun, or Hun. He noted that fund has performed well, thanks in part to recent staff cuts. Pension costs drove property tax increases for Normal every year from 2006 to 2017. The tax rate fell in 2018, and 2019's tax rate is expected to be published in November. That information was discussed as part of Normal's annual financial trends and conditions report presented by Hoon. After the presentation, council member Stan Nord asked Hoon how the town might expect to react to cuts in the state budget suggested last week by Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker. The town receives income tax, sales tax, and motor fuel tax funneled through the state. In recent budgets, the state has assessed a fee for state tax collection and taken a flat percentage, currently 5% of income tax revenue intended for municipalities. If the state gets tighter, that's problematic, but we'll have to see how it shakes out, said Hoon. Those payments from the state to the town could all change with legislative action. We are always at the state's whim budgetarily. In other business, the council continued to fight over Connect Transit and its own rules and practices. When Mark Tiritilli, a one-time mayoral opponent of Coos, began to speak about a vacant Normal appointment to the Bloomington Normal Bus Systems Board during public comment, Kuz noted the town mandate's comments relate to agenda items and Connect Transit was not on Monday's agenda. The Illinois Attorney General's office is investigating a challenge to that rule filed by Councilmember Karen Smith this spring. Tirit Tilley ultimately backed down, but Nord asked for his comment to continue during council comments at the end of the meeting. Kuz said that was possible if the council suspended its rules. Nord and Smith voted yes, while Kuz and council members Chamberlain Cummings, Kathleen Lorenz, and Kevin McCarthy voted no. Nord then spoke about the vacant seat, which he also has pressed Kuz to fill, especially given the recent controversy about Connect Transit. Kuz said that toxicity has caused candidates that he hoped to appoint to step aside. Lorenz questioned whether Nord had, in fact, reading from notes, delivered Tirit Tilley's message regardless, cutting off his response by saying that it's a rhetorical question. Tirit Tilley stood up after the meeting adjourned and said that was not true. Kuz also tangled with Smith when she attempted to amend the council's minutes to, in her opinion, better reflect what she said during the September 3rd meeting. Kuz said that was inappropriate and that Clerk Angie Hunker knows how to do minutes. Nord and Smith voted yes on the amendment, with Nord saying such changes are appropriate if they fit to the video record of the meeting. Kuz, Cummings, Lorenz, McCarthy, and Scott Preston voted no. Lawmakers fix wage law, alter $15 minimum to soften down state impact, some argue. Several central Illinois legislators are not ready to throw in the towel on a series of hikes to the state minimum wage approved this year, bumping that wage from $8.25 to $15 over 6 years will have disastrous effects on local employers, from private businesses to school districts and universities, and that should be reevaluated possibly during the General Assembly's fall veto session, some Republicans said today. I hear comments saying, please reconvene the discussion on the minimum wage and how that may be worked in, particularly for downstate, said State Representative Keith Summer of Morton during a legislative breakfast with the McLean County Board. This issue isn't going away. Republicans in the legislature called for some kind of regional conditions on the minimum wage bill, but that was not included in what lawmakers approved and Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker signed into law in February. The rate will increase statewide to $9.25 on January 1st, $10 in 2020, and by $1 each year to 2025. Chicago is going from $12 to $15. That's not the same thing as what we're going to go through here, said State Senator Chapin Rose of Mahomet. State Senator Jason Barrickman of Bloomington acknowledged any further action is unlikely. The increases were approved overwhelmingly and were a campaign promise of Pritzker. But Rose said something needs to change to protect the region's jobs and educational institutions. I've got an 800-employee factory in my district that's now looking to potentially move out of state. That is a huge problem, he said. Rose did not identify the employer. Andrew Libman, CEO of cleaning product manufacturer Libman, told legislators this spring he was considering relocating the company's Arcola headquarters and hundreds of jobs. That 5% increase the university's got will be very quickly eaten up by payroll cost, Rose said. Superintendents have told me the minimum wage increase will wipe away the entire gains that have been received under that monumental work of a new funding formula. For what? Items that could be discussed in the veto session, which starts in October and ends in November, include gambling expansion, recreational cannabis, and vaping, said Barrickman. State Representative Dan Coggins of Decatur said he hopes the legislature will take up a bill he proposed allowing administrators to punish the students for bringing gun-like objects like airsoft BB guns into schools. In one of only 7 vetoes this year, Pritzker rejected that bill for what Calkins said were technical issues. Bergman said it's unlikely a Path to 100 alternative energy bill will be discussed, as supporters hoped this spring. That's still being negotiated and may be reintroduced next year, said State Representative Dan Brady of Bloomington. Bergman, Brady, and Summer also stayed after the meeting to talk to members of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America's local group, which has about 60 active members. They lobbied for a Fix the FOID bill to improve gun rules that's passed the House but awaits action in the Senate. Having listened and not heard anybody bring up the timely issue of gun violence and gun violence prevention, we wanted to share some information packets on research, said Karen Irvin, who co-leads the local group. We know that not only locally but statewide and at the national level, people are hungry for elected officials to do something. We want to be visible. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, September 17th, the 260th day of 2019. There are 105 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On September 17th, 1987, the city of Philadelphia, birthplace of the U.S. Constitution, threw a big party to celebrate the 200th anniversary of the historic document. In a speech at Independence Hall, President Ronald Reagan acclaimed the framing of the Constitution as a milestone that would profoundly and forever alter not just these United States, but the world. On this date in 1862, more than 3,600 men were killed in the Civil War Battle of Antietam in Maryland. In 1939, the Soviet Union invaded Poland during World War II, more than 2 weeks after Nazi Germany had launched its assault. In 1944, during World War II, Allied paratroopers launched Operation Market Garden, landing behind German lines in the Netherlands. After initial success, the Allies were beaten back by the Germans. In 1947, James V. Forrestal was sworn in as the first U.S. Secretary of Defense. In 1994, Heather Whitestone of Alabama was crowned the first deaf Miss America. Thought for today. We must not say every mistake is a foolish one. Written by Cicero, a Roman scholar, 104 to 43 BC. How time flies. 100 years ago, September 17, 1919. Lorne Murray is keeping a carrier pigeon that flew against a window at a neighbor's house and did not resist capture. It apparently had a message tied to its leg at one time, but only the string remains. Murray is hoping to find the owner of the bird. 75 years ago, September 17, 1944, Illinois State Normal University went giant hunting in Champaign, taking on the Fighting Illini in a football game. The Redbirds found they need some more work, losing to Illinois by a score of 79-0. A crowd of 5,386 paying fans watched the game in Memorial Stadium. 50 years ago, in 1969, Governor Richard Ogilvie named Illinois House Speaker Ralph T. Smith to take the seat of U.S. Senator Everett Dirksen, Republican Pekin, who recently died. Smith will fill Dirksen's unexpired term until the 1970 election. Ballot opposition is already building among Democrats and Republicans. 25 years ago, in 1994, Bloomington Police Officer Marvin Arnold has moved into Woodhill Towers as a volunteer community policing assignment. The rent is free, but he'll give up some privacy. Arnold's residency should help to deter crime at Woodhill and show the human side of a cop. Today's Flick Fact. Due to a lack of business, Safari Pizza in Normal closed 50 years ago this summer after a 6-year run. Was it because of poor location? And the answer is, one would suggest not. The business that replaced Safari Pizza in the building along Main Street near Dry Grove Street in Normal in 1969 was an Italian restaurant called Avanti's, now one of Normal's more popular eateries. Rights to reopen soon. Furniture store lost warehouse to fire. Waits for electricity. Pontiac. When Bill Alvey assumed the role as Pontiac mayor 6 weeks ago, he knew at some point his administration would face a challenge. What he didn't know was that his first real crisis would also impact his day job as marketing manager at Wright's Furniture, just a block from City Hall. On Saturday, Alvey had his hands full, dealing sometimes as mayor and sometimes as a Wright's Furniture employee, when the warehouse for the 66-year-old business caught fire. It's the wrong place to have a crisis, he said. Investigators have not yet released an official cause, but store owner Gary Wright told the Pantograph on Saturday that an employee noticed smoke near a circuit breaker in the warehouse, but the fire had made headway despite attempts with a fire extinguisher. Pontiac Fire Chief Jacob Campbell said the state fire marshal's office is investigating and will release the cause once the investigation is complete. The store at 115 East Madison remains closed, and Wright said ComEd is working to get power restored. As soon as it is restored, the business will reopen. The only impact this fire had to our store was the loss of power and some very minimal smoke damage in only part of the building, he said. Our warehouse, which housed extra appliances, mattresses, and hard surface flooring, was a complete loss. We will be able to replace those items quickly once we are able to regain power back to the store to do business again. And power could be restored today or Wednesday, Alvey said. The fire also destroyed Duffy Ambulance Service next door at 122 East Howard Street. The service has temporarily relocated to Central Truck and Ag at 1 Industrial Court in Pontiac. 19 fire departments responded to the fire. Everyone did a fantastic job, and we appreciated their help, he said. We were lucky because the wind was not very strong and was blowing away from the downtown area. In the path of the smoke and across the street is the former Duffy buyer Snedeker Funeral Home, which may have sustained some smoke damage but now is vacant, Alvey said. We have concerns about the residents down the block too, of course, because we know there was a lot of smoke, he added. The Pontiac Public Library closed Saturday following the fire and remained closed Monday. There are unfortunately some unforeseen circumstances related to Saturday's fire that we are having to deal with, but we are working as diligently as we can to reopen as quickly as possible, said Library Director Kristen Holzhauer. Anyone that has library items with due dates falling during our closure will have their due date extended and their overdue fines waived. For Alvey, it wasn't the first time that he helped with a crisis at the store. On August 18, 1976, a fire started in an elevator shaft in the basement and caused $300,000 damage. At the time, he was an advertising director for a Pontiac newspaper with an office located next door to the store. All I did was come over and help move stuff for them, but it took some time, he said. We worked several days and nights taking stuff out that was not salvageable, he said. The stuff that was salvageable was set aside, and the store had a charity event for it. Wright's Furniture was founded by Lloyd Wright in April 1953 in a 4,000-square-foot store that had been Woods Furniture in downtown Pontiac. Today, the showrooms and warehouses total approximately 60,000 square feet of floor space. About 25 employees work at the store, including Gary's sons, Sean and Eric. Arena deficit down in 2019. Grossinger Motors Arena ended fiscal 2019 with less operating deficit than in each of the two prior years under VenueWorks management. The city-owned downtown venue had an unaudited net operating loss of $270,922 for the fiscal year that ended April 30th. That's about $390,000 less than the operating losses of about $660,000 for each year since the Ames, Iowa-based arena management firm took over, running the facility in April 2016. This arena brings a quality of life to our community to the tune of about $3.46 per citizen to subsidize it for the year based on the city's population of 78,000, Ward 9 Alderwoman Kim Bray said. The talk and the naysayers about the albatross of the arena, I think those days are over. Ward 2 Alderwoman Donna Boland pointed out, VenueWorks operating costs do not include the arena's construction bonds and capital improvement projects for which the city is responsible. City Manager Tim Gleason said the city still has about $20 million in construction bonds to pay off over the next 20 years. Lynn Cannon, VenueWorks Executive Director for the arena, said the facility was able to increase revenues in two areas. The combined revenue from the venue's 13 shows resulted in an increase of more than $200,000 from fiscal 2018, said Cannon. In addition to that, we were able to sell almost all of our sponsorship opportunities, said Cannon. In fact, it is up over $63,000 from the previous year. The arena experienced savings in occupancy expenses, especially in electricity costs, and a $49,000 savings in payroll expenses, said Cannon. The facility has operated for most of its 13-year history at a loss under VenueWorks and its former management firm, Central Illinois Arena Management. In another matter, Bloomington Public Works Director Jim Karch said, the city has received $528,592 from the city's insurance carrier to cover a maintenance building, vehicles, equipment, and other contents that were destroyed by a March 10th fire at Lake Bloomington. But the total claim amount could be higher, depending on negotiations, he added. The department is recommending construction of a larger replacement facility, moving it and a ranger station closer to the city's water treatment plant at the lake, and enclosing that area with a new security fence, along with about $500,000 in needed water plant improvements. The project's total cost is estimated at $1.2 million. The council will vote Monday on approving people to serve on a 10-member task force that will help sort through issues related to the state's legalization of cannabis, including taxing, zoning, and whether to allow a cannabis dispensary in the city. Grammy winner Daigle to play arena. Tickets go on sale Friday for two-time Grammy Award winner Lauren Daigle, who will bring her world tour to Grossinger Motors Arena in Bloomington on March 14th. American Express card members can purchase tickets beginning at noon today with a limited number of VIP packages. General tickets go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday at www.laurendaigle.com/tour. The show features her latest single, Rescue, and number one single, You Say. Let's take a break now and return with the second half hour. Please stay tuned.